Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today I'm going to be doing an episode on the topic of energetically expensive personality traits. Energetically expensive personality traits are basically traits or tendencies which we have which cost us energy in our fatigue recovery journey. They are habits, behaviors, or ways of being that are tiring to continue to pursue, to continue to act out, and continue to maintain in our lives. They're often things that are happening unconsciously. Sometimes we aren't even aware that we're doing them, or they're happening consciously, but we just don't know how to change them. So what I'm going to be doing in this episode is to bring some of these habits and personality traits into more of your consciousness, but also talk about things that I found helpful in changing some of mine, and make suggestions on how you can begin to compassionately change some of yours. Before I go into the episode, as always, I would just love to ask you to leave a review if you haven't already. You can just nip into Spotify or iTunes, leave a 5-star rating. If you have a little bit of time on iTunes, you can always leave a written paragraph. And I would just really appreciate it. Every single week when the podcast comes out, to go in and I check how many reviews we've got. And each week I see them going up a little bit more and a little bit more. It's really appealing to my inner achiever, which is quite fitting in the context of this episode today. But also it just means that if the podcast has better and more ratings, then that helps other people find the information. And some of this information can really change the trajectory of someone's illness or just really make a difference in terms of their quality of life. And so you taking the time to leave the review plays a part in that. And that's how you can pay this forward to the community. So I'd really appreciate it if you could do that now. And then we'll go into the episode. So just for context, it is, we're having a little mini heat wave here in the UK, which is lovely. I was on the beach this morning very early having a picnic breakfast, which is something I like to do when the weather is good. But now I'm in my office with the doors and windows all closed to help with the sound quality. And it's probably going to be a hot and sweaty podcast, but I look forward to talking to you all about energetically expensive personality traits. So let's dive straight in and talk about what these personality traits are. What I would say first and foremost is there's probably more tendencies and personality traits which are energetically expensive, which I won't necessarily go into detail in this episode, but I'm going to talk about the core ones or the main ones that I'm sort of looking for or that are showing up when I'm working with clients and things that have shown up for me in my own journey as well. So let's talk about what these different personality traits are. And I've got the top ones here, which is the people pleaser, the controller, the helper or the overgiver. I put them together, the achiever. And we could probably also add in, I didn't actually have this one in my notes, but it's very fitting, is the perfectionist. So those will probably be my top five energetically expensive personality traits. And I would say to a certain extent, I personally resonate with almost all of them to varying degrees. Some of them are stronger than others. All of these personality traits will show up differently in our lives. So typically a people pleaser is somebody who, you know, struggles to put their needs first or struggles to say no. They might say yes when they really want to say no, because ultimately there's this inherent belief that it's not safe to say no, or it's not safe to put my needs first. Or in some cases, I know in my own journey, I was so disconnected from my body. I was so disconnected from my needs that often I would say yes, not even realizing that I needed to say no because I didn't even know what I needed at the time. So there's this sort of disassociation or disconnection from our authentic self, which is part of the underlying cause of many of these energetically expensive personality traits anyway. Then there can be the controller. So the controller likes to be in control, whether that is controlling plans, controlling food, controlling their schedule. They need to know what's going to happen. They need to be the one who's in charge. They need to be the one who's in control. And so anything that feels even slightly out of control can be very scary for the controller. And I know this definitely shows up a lot in my life. There's, I'm somebody who has like a high need for certainty. It feels more safe when things are certain and I know what's going to happen. And also when I can be the one who's in control of what happens. And that kind of get masks a little bit through leadership. I like to be the leader in groups. I will be the one who steps up and says, let's do this. Let's go here. In my business, obviously have a leadership role. In friendships and relationships, I tend to be more of a leader, you know, the one who's stepping out and, you know, saying, let's do this, let's go here. And but obviously it can be a really positive thing because it comes across as confident, it comes across as assertive. And I do believe that those are qualities that I do have. But I think it also does serve the secondary role of, if I'm the one who's leading, I'm the one who can control the situation. And being able to soften and just let somebody else lead, or just go with the flow, or just let things happen, or not have a high sense of urgency to sort of make things happen, that can be really challenging for me. It's something I've got to continuously work on. And ultimately, it comes down to things feel safer when there's certainty. Things feel safer when I'm in control. And probably also stemming back to, in many cases, it's children who grew up in unpredictable households, or they were unpredictable situations. You know, sometimes we want to be able to find a sense of control and autonomy because that helps us feel safer given the history that we've had in our childhoods. And sometimes children who often become the parentified child, which is the child who often has to step up and act more like an adult and is never really given the opportunity to just be a child and to surrender and soften and not have to worry about things and just, you know, have their needs taken care of. So, and that might resonate with some of you. I know that one can be quite a strong one for me. And then the next one is the helper or the overgiver. Obviously, I'm in a helping profession, so I know all about being a helper. And there's nothing wrong with helping. There's nothing wrong with being generous. There's nothing wrong with giving. But here I use the terminology overgiver. It's because when we are excessively helpful or we give too much above and beyond the capacity that we have to give, which leaves us feeling depleted and exhausted. You know, I always kind of use this joke, like if somebody buys me a coffee, then I feel like I need to sort of, you know, buy them a private island and a speedboat. There's this inability to receive because it doesn't necessarily feel safe to receive. And this tendency to like overgive, overdeliver all the time, which can often come from this idea that we feel safer if other people need us. We feel more worthy. We feel more validated. We feel like we have more purpose. We feel like we have more of an existence if we're needed by others. And yeah, it's often a way that we, if we're constantly giving all the time, we are blocking the vulnerability that we might experience if we were to be the ones who were softening and receiving. But it's exhausting to give all the time, especially if you're giving beyond your capacity. But one of the fantastic things that I have managed to cultivate through my own healing journey is this ability to know when I can give and when I can't, and then to be able to give from a really grounded place, from a really generous, authentically generous place, I guess, and also knowing what I need to take care of myself so that I can give to my clients, to my relationships, to friends, to family, knowing when I need to give and when I need to say no, has been a very, very valuable skill that I've been able to cultivate. And then the next is the achiever. Very, very strong achiever over here. So I know all about the achiever. And the achiever is somebody who doesn't just like to achieve. I'm sure we all like to achieve to a degree. We all like to win. but it's also about needing to achieve, only feeling validated if we achieve, feeling unworthy or a sense of stuckness if we're not constantly moving forward, if we're not constantly progressing, if we're not constantly growing, if we're not constantly doing more and more and more. There's almost a sense of urgency which comes with the achiever. And it's like an urgent need to achieve versus a natural achievement that may generally happen if you apply yourself in life. And that can become incredibly toxic over time because we are constantly operating outside of ourselves, operating outside of our capacity to achieve projects. And in doing so, we deny some of our basic needs for rest and for care and for looking after ourselves. And as I said already, the one that I didn't plan, which is also on the list, is the perfectionist. I don't know why I left the perfectionist out. I personally don't resonate so much with the perfectionist because I'm not such a detail-orientated person. Maybe some of my clients would beg to differ because often in the work that we're doing, it is very detail-orientated. But I'm more of a big picture thinker. So I like to think of the big picture and then like fill in the details as I go. And that's really actually useful doing this work because you need to have the hypothesis of what's going on for someone before you can work on the details of what someone needs to do. But I'm not overly perfectionist. So maybe that's why I left this one off of the list. Like there's certain elements perhaps in my life, which I like to be perfect. And then there's also certain things I can just let go. But obviously if you are somebody who is a perfectionist, it's this, fear of making mistakes, fear that, you know, you're not lovable, you're not worthy unless everything is absolutely perfect. So a huge amount of our self-worth is tied to making things perfect. And then we can invest huge amounts of time and energy in having everything all buttoned up and perfectly done all the time, often at the denial of our need for self-care. Those are some of the main energetically expensive personality traits and how they may manifest. Sometimes they can also be a little bit sneaky. So you might not think you have some, and then on further reflection, you realize you have more than what you think. So feel free to take some time to reflect on those and just consider how these are maybe showing up for you in your fatigue recovery journey. The next thing to consider, because this is probably going to be a question that you're having, is you've identified maybe some or all of these personality traits to a varying degree. But maybe you're thinking about, well, where did these come from? How did they develop over time? And these patterns often, but not always, created in our childhood, often due to the attachment relationship between us and our primary caregivers, whether that's mom or dad or grandma or grandpa or somebody else in our life who was taking care of us when we were young. We're all wired for survival. And when we are young, it's our attachment to our primary caregivers that is essential for us to survive. Because as a young child who, if you can't feed yourself, if you don't have food and warmth and shelter and love, that signals death. We all evolved in tribes. We're all involved in communities where the relationships between us and our tribal members would be the essential ingredients for survival. So to not be approved of, to be outcast from the tribe, was a death sentence to a certain extent. So maintaining a relationship with people who can take care of us and with communities is an essential survival skill. And when we're looking at this from like a developmental trauma perspective, it's often these patterns are wired into our being based on the feedback that we got from a young age. For example, it's not safe to say no. It's not safe to put my needs first. We talked about the parentified child and having a child having to take on more responsibility than they should have to do at any given age. Feeling like we need to be needed and therefore be like overly helpful so we can get the approval of others or the love from others or a sense of purpose or a sense of existence. Feeling like we were only worthy if we achieved something and therefore feeling like we constantly have to earn love through achievement. or feeling like we couldn't make mistakes. We had to get things perfect. It was only when we got things perfect that we got love. So all of these patterns can develop from our childhood, not always, but the majority of which are wired in from a young age. And then they start to become part of who we are. You know, often when I'll talk with clients, they'll say like, oh, I'm such a people pleaser. Or I always say I'm such an overachiever. But these things can also show up in subtle ways. And in your fatigue recovery journey, it often looks like, you know, little things like not making plans and then perhaps knowing that you shouldn't go or you shouldn't do the thing and then not wanting to say no. Or maybe you go to an event and then you know you need to go rest, you need to lie down, you need to leave early, but you don't assert yourself because you don't want to upset anyone, you don't want to rock the boat. Or perhaps it's, you know, saying that you'll help a friend and being there for someone or giving, whether that's emotional support or doing things for other people when actually you just don't have the capacity to, and then that leaves you exhausted. Whatever these energetically expensive personality traits are, when we're doing them, what's happening is they're costing us energy because we're often going beyond our capacity at any given time to meet the needs of this part, to meet the needs of the people pleaser part, to meet the needs of the controller or the helper or the achiever or the perfectionist. And essentially what this is it's self-abandonment. We're disconnecting from our authentic needs. We're disconnecting from what matters to us, which is our body, our health, our vitality, to fulfill the needs of a part of us that was created perhaps long ago so that we could survive. But maybe now we don't need that part anymore. Maybe now there's an opportunity for that part to be cared for in a different way. We can care for our survival in a different way. And in fact, we have to care for our survival in a different way because that is how we heal through our illness, by addressing some of these parts that got us there in the first place, parts that perhaps served us really well at a time in our life, but are no longer serving us well. And by starting to gently and compassionately acknowledge and recondition these parts, we can claim back the energy that is being lost. The energy that is being lost due to overexertion, overexpenditure, operating beyond our capacity, but also the energy that is being lost from acting in opposition of our truest self, acting in opposition of our most authentic self. And the journey to healing is really the journey to coming back to connection with self, to our own authenticity, to reconnecting to our body, to reconnecting to our needs, and to reconnecting to some of the parts of ourselves that we've abandoned so that we can fulfill the needs of these other parts, which are no longer serving us. So how do we do that is obviously the big, big question. So when it comes to making any change, the most important thing to acknowledge first and foremost is that awareness is the first stage of change. So you're listening to this podcast, you're hearing me talk about these energy expensive personality traits, and you may have already been aware that some of these personality traits are a part of your picture, but there might be new awareness that's coming in, or you realize that you had some of these parts, but now you're identifying with some others, or you didn't realize that some of the parts you do have are as bad as what they really are. And so it's through awareness that we can start to create change. And so once we have the awareness, the next step, I would also say, is not necessarily to move directly towards change in the sense of not necessarily efforting or pushing ourselves towards change. I think a big part after awareness is to have a little bit of acceptance and to have some self-compassion. So understanding that these parts that we created, whether it's the people pleaser, the controller, the helper, overgiver, the achiever, the perfectionist, They were highly intelligent creations. You created them because they helped you survive. They helped you meet a need that was incredibly important in your life. And to suddenly say, you're bad, you're wrong, you shouldn't be here, I need to stop utilizing you, is not necessarily giving those parts of you enough credit. It's not necessarily giving you enough credit for what you've been able to create and how far you've been able to get. And obviously, I think it's Einstein who says you can't solve a problem with the same energy that created it. So we can't necessarily heal through the illness still utilizing these parts, but we can acknowledge and accept that these parts got us this far in life. And we want to have compassion for what they were trying to achieve at the time, because ultimately they were trying to help us feel safe. They were trying to help us feel loved. They were trying to help us feel seen. They were trying to help us meet our needs. They were trying to help us feel like we had a purpose, maybe even feel like we existed and that we were worthy. And those are all very, very noble things. It's very noble and it's very human to want to have all of those things. And these were the parts that you created to help you get there. But they're not necessarily the parts that are going to get you into the next stage of your journey. So what do? We have awareness. We identify the parts. We have compassion and understanding and grace and love for these parts and what they were able to do to us at a time in our life when we didn't know any better. And then we have the opportunity to start to create change. And like anything, when it comes to the nervous system, and especially syndromal nervous systems who are perhaps a little bit less stable, we need to go slowly, we need to go gently, and we need to have a lot of compassion as we do. And so then it's just about starting off by just cultivating your own ability to self-regulate. It's not necessarily about going in and overhauling the people pleaser or harnessing or back the achiever. It's very much about understanding that these parts were created from a lack of safety. And the more we can create an internalized and embodied sense of internal safety, that we are going to be able to feel more comfortable and safe to create the change. So it's not necessarily about working directly on these parts, but it's overall just building our capacity for self-regulation and finding an internal sense of safety. And how you do that is going to be determined by you and your system. I've done a previous episode on all the ways you can support your nervous system. I think it's episode 92. And that might be a good place to start. But I'll hold my hands up and say I'm incredibly biased, and I feel that somatic experiencing and somatic tools, at least from my system and what I've seen working with my clients, are really fantastic when it comes to building our own capacity for self-regulation and building that internal sense of safety. And I don't make it any secret that I have been in somatic therapy for almost 3 years now. Part of that is part of my own training that I did, but I think even if I hadn't done that training, I would have still wanted to do the somatic therapy. So somatic therapy can be really helpful, especially if you're working one-on-one with a practitioner, to then start to dig perhaps into some of these developmental patterns and start to work through some of the things that caused them to be created in the first place. This is obviously easiest done in a one-on-one setting with a practitioner, but there are also things that you can do on your own that can be supportive. Other things to explore would be internal family systems, which uses a lot of parts work. So the parts work is obviously great because we are working with parts, the people pleaser part, The controller part, the helper part, the overgiver part, the achiever part, the perfectionist part. It's understanding that these are just parts of you. They're not the whole of your authentic self. They're not the whole of your authentic you. They're just parts that you nourished so that you could survive. And there is an opportunity to nourish other parts through your own healing journey. So internal family systems could be a good one. Neuroaffective touch. So I've talked a little bit about touch work and how touch work has been particularly supportive for me. Touch work can really help with some of the developmental trauma that we may have. Talking therapy in some cases can be helpful. I'm not a big fan of talking therapies just because I'm biased when it comes to somatic therapies, but I always like to say, you know, people find their own way to healing and people find the way that works for them. And sometimes, especially depending on the person and their nervous system, going too deep into the body too quickly can feel like too much. So having something where there's more of a dialogue, like therapy or counseling, can be helpful. Coaching can also be helpful. Having a coach who can help you sort of identify where these patterns are showing up and set you little goals, you know, to say no or to change certain behaviors. That can be helpful. Again, with coaching, because it is more sort of action orientated, sometimes we can push ourselves to do the action, but I'm a much bigger fan of creating the change on the nervous system level. So there's less push energy required to do the action. It's more of a natural, organic transition, which happens through the changes in the nervous system. So it can obviously be a lot of money if you're investing in a coach or a therapist or a somatic experiencing practitioner or a touch-based therapist. So some other things to consider is there's a really nice online platform, which is very reasonably priced. It's called To Be Magnetic, and they have a lot of brain retraining, hypnosis style things, which can help you work through some of these, what we would call core wounds or developmental patterns. Journaling can be really helpful, just kind of journaling on what is the part that's showing up for me? What beliefs does this part have? What are some alternative beliefs I would like to cultivate? Where is some evidence for this in my life? So you could look for, almost do like some self-coaching through a journaling practice to just help you to make change. And then I guess it really is the next step after awareness and having compassion and creating self-regulation and maybe unpicking some of the patterns is it all comes down to action. Eventually, we're going to get to a point where we just need to do something differently and we need to act. And the way that I like to approach things, as I've said already, is to create these deeper level system changes so the actions are more organic and natural. But even if that is the case, it can still bring up a lot for us when we finally say no, or we say, you know, I can help, but only this much. Or we give our achiever a little bit more patience and a little bit less urgency. Or we soften and we surrender and we let someone else step up so we don't need to control everything all the time. So it can still feel really uncomfortable, even in the process of change. And just to kind of name that, and that's where you can, having the capacity for self-regulation can be really important. So as there's some discomfort coming up as you start to create these changes, you also have the ability to self-soothe and to reassure as you're making the changes. People often say is what often comes up a lot is guilt. I feel so guilty when I say no. Or I feel guilty that I'm resting and I'm not, you know, pushing ahead. Or I feel guilty, you know, when I let someone else like take over and I'm not the one who's controlling everything. Guilt is often a positive thing. Many of us will think of it as a bad thing, like, oh, it's uncomfortable. I don't want to feel guilty. But what the conversation I like to have with my clients is guilt is often a sign that we're changing. And because guilt is when we're doing something different from what we've done. That's why we feel guilty. The reason why you feel guilty is because you're saying no, which is the point of the exercise. Sometimes it's about just sitting with discomfort of the guilt. So again, having that capacity for emotional regulation, we feel the guilt. We don't need to react to the guilt. We can sit with the discomfort of the guilt. And then as time goes on, we recondition the system to a new norm. And there's a really lovely quote from Gabor Mate, who I'm such a fan of. He talks a lot about these types of these energetically expensive personality traits in his book, When the Body Says No, which I'd highly recommend that anybody who's experiencing a chronic illness reads. But he has a lovely quote, which is, at least in the beginning of growth, if they do not feel guilt, they are probably ignoring their truest self. And a big thing with Gabor Mate is about this idea of authenticity. When we deny our authentic nature, that is when we create huge amounts of stress on the body. And part of healing is reducing those hidden stresses, unburdening ourselves of these self-created, even though we didn't create them on purpose, these self-created stresses, which are eating away at us day to day, because these ways of being that we've utilized to survive are stopping us from really being ourselves. And the journey to healing is to come back to ourselves, to reconnect with our needs and reconnect with who we are and what lights us up and what makes us happy and just what matters most, what we value most and what's important to us in our life. And so in my own journey, I think I shared a little bit about this already, but I just, for the longest time, I didn't even realize I had needs. If you'd be like, what do you need? I'd be like, I don't know, you know. And now I feel like this journey, even though I'd never, ever want to relive my darkest days of chronic fatigue syndrome, this journey has been such a gift. And that might be really hard to hear for some of you who are in the really, really dark days right now. But on the other side, I'm so grateful for the opportunity, because I never, ever would have been able to get to know myself and connect with myself on the level that I have over the past few years without this experience. And it's been such a gift. And a big part of that is just realizing what I need. And then also being able to have the felt experience in the body when I'm not getting what I need. So to be able to feel that's a no for me. That's too much for me. I can't do that. I can't give right now because I'm not filled up enough myself. And another big one is just noticing when I'm getting a sense of urgency and really slowing things down so that inner achiever stays a little bit more under control. And it takes time. So again, just to give yourself the compassion for this to happen slowly, to start with the small things, which are easier to say no to or easier to set boundaries around, and really celebrate every little win. You know, don't go into the most difficult situation where it's been really, really challenging and you're really afraid of setting some boundaries, and don't tackle that situation first. Tackle the smallest situations, the tiny conflicts, the places where there's not as much charge. And as you continue to rehearse the behaviors and you practice more and you practice more and you're re-coming back to your authenticity, that will help to cultivate more strength to tackle some of the bigger things. And if you can afford it, if it is within your means to get some professional support, I'd always recommend that. But if not, there's also like amazing books that you can read. There's some low cost or no cost resources that you can utilize, and not underestimating the impact of this work on the whole journey. Because if these energetically expensive personality traits continue to play out in your life, then they will continue to be things that take extra energy. And everybody with chronic fatigue says, you know, it's constantly having to balance my energy and manage my energy and choosing between things I want to do and things I have to do. Working on some of these things will help to free up energy so you can do more of the things you want to do on a day-to-day level. And there's more energy available for your health and for your healing. So I hope you have enjoyed listening to this episode today. Perhaps you're a little bit more intimately acquainted with your different energetically expensive personality traits. Maybe just to wrap up, I can give you some reflective questions you could just journal on if you would like to explore these a little bit further. So perhaps just on a page, you could write down the different personality types. So the people pleaser, controller, helper and overgiver, achiever and perfectionist. And then you could ask the questions, how do these parts show up in my life? And think of all the ways. So it can be easy to say like one or two things, but just think, is there anywhere else? And you could also kind of reverse engineer it. So think about the situations that are causing you stress or draining your energy and just think what parts are showing up here. It might be one, it might be a combination of them, and write that all down. And then you could write down the answer to this question, which is, how have these parts helped me in my life so far? So we've, first of all, building the awareness. Now we're finding compassion. How are these parts helpful to you? How have they served you? And then you could say, answer the question, how would I like things to be different? So you're creating a new map, a new model of what you'd like to do differently. And then think about, how could I support myself towards this vision? So it could be working on nervous system regulation, building capacity, could be doing more of the things you enjoy and prioritizing that. It could be getting some professional support. It could be reading some more books. It could be other resources that you can utilize to work towards what you want to create. And then in terms of actions, like, what is the first step? There might be one little thing that you're doing. Like, if I could just stop doing that, like whenever I see my friends, I tell them I'm just going to come for an hour, but I always stay for an hour and a half and it's too much. Or whenever I'm working on this project, I always say I'm going to stop and take a break, but then I get so excited and I keep on pushing through. So what is one little action that you can take this week, this month, that would just help to start to change some of these behaviors that these parts are pushing you forward into? So that's just a little bit of self-reflection. Take it or leave it. I hope you have enjoyed this episode, and I will see you in the next one.